The information in this skill is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Welcome, and thank you for listening to the SMA Flash Briefings.
Hi, I'm Price Wooldridge. As a rare neuromuscular disorder patient myself, I enjoy reading flash briefings for spinal muscular atrophy. Here's an article by Patricia Anasio, Ph.D. Texas adds SMA to its newborn screening program. Newborn screening for spinal muscular atrophy is now offered in 85% of all annual births in the U.S., Cure SMA has announced. The milestone, which means that 8 in 10 babies are getting tested at birth, was reached after Texas included the newborn screening on June 1, increasing the number of states with the screening to 37. The addition of Texas to the state screening for SMA is a great milestone in our advocacy efforts to have every newborn in the country screened at birth, said Kenneth Hobby, president of Cure SMA. With the availability of effective treatments for SMA, early diagnosis is more important than ever before, he said. Children now have the chance to be treated before the onset of serious and often irreversible symptoms that could drastically impact their life. Massachusetts began to offer the screening in January 2018, one of the first states to do so, 6 months before SMA was added to the U.S. recommended uniform screening panel for newborns. Texas is the latest to join the ranks recently of screening states, along with Maine, Montana, and Oklahoma. Babies born and diagnosed with SMA in Texas, which accounts for approximately 377,000, or 10% of births in the U.S. annually, will be able to start treatment before they develop any symptoms. Newborn screening is a test performed on blood collected shortly after birth to look for mutations that are known causes of diseases like SMA, the most common cause of pediatric mortality linked to a genetic mutation. An early diagnosis means that babies can have access to treatment promptly, increasing the likelihood of better outcomes later in life. Early diagnosis of SMA, followed by early treatment, is essential to maximizing a child's health outcomes from this debilitating disease, said Mary Schroth, MD, Chief Medical Officer at Cure SMA. She added, quote, "Identifying and treating SMA as early as possible, and with newborn screening often pre-symptomatically, can dramatically improve baby's breathing, muscle control, and ability to move independently."
Coming up next, perspectives from SMA News Today Forums Director Kevin Schaefer.
From Embracing My Inner Alien, a column by Kevin Schaefer. "Let me know if you need anything." An usher exclaimed these words at the top of his lungs in the church auditorium while putting his hand on my shoulder. To say that this experience was patronizing would be an understatement, but it did provide the catalyst for the perfect rebuttal. Upon moving away from this man and taking a seat, I leaned over to my brother and said, "Hey, apparently I'm deaf and blind in addition to being in a wheelchair." I'll never forget this encounter from a few years ago, back when my siblings and I attended a megachurch in our area. Though I'm sure this man had good intentions of being accommodating to one of the only wheelchair users in the packed auditorium, his approach toward me exhibited an ableist attitude that I see all too often in churches. Though I haven't written about it extensively, the church has been a factor in my life since I was born, from being raised in a Baptist household to being active in a campus ministry when I was in college. I have myriad experiences in religious circles and communities. My faithful readers will even recall that the title of my column stems from a message my youth pastor gave when I was in high school. I have plenty of positive experiences with church friends and people, and my faith will always remain a core part of my identity. Yet, with Disability Pride Month now underway, I'd like to present ways that the church can be more inclusive toward people with disabilities. Note, I'm basing these principles on my experiences in the Christian church, but they remain applicable to organizations and communities from any religion or faith. Building access. I only learned through research for this column that the church is exempt from having to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990. While this revelation was new to me, I can't say it was terribly surprising. Whether it's an inaccessible stage in a church sanctuary, or simply off-campus youth events that emphasize physical activity, many churches don't make basic accessibility a priority. When youth groups make ice skating and camping trips their primary social events, don't expect many wheelchair users to show up. This same principle applies to small groups that only meet in people's houses. When I was a kid, Sunday school and Bible studies still took place in church buildings, making them easy for me to attend. In recent years, however, more Christian communities are meeting in people's houses, the majority of which are woefully inaccessible. Without the option to meet in an accessible venue, disabled individuals are completely isolated from the community spaces that churches put so much emphasis on. Virtual options. A silver lining of the COVID-19 pandemic is that virtual interactions were integrated into every part of our society. This has been especially helpful for disabled individuals who now have more opportunities for remote work, online social events, and virtual worship services. Being able to watch a church service on YouTube or participate in virtual small groups via Zoom has opened up a world of possibilities for people with all kinds of disabilities. As the world reopens and in-person gatherings resume, we should not abandon virtual options. For many people in disability and chronic illness communities, virtual gatherings remain the most accessible form of participation, treating us like people. Even more important than basic accessibility is treating people with disabilities and chronic illnesses with dignity. As soon as a church member talks down to a wheelchair user or prays for them to be healed, that person in a wheelchair user will feel alienated. Instead, we just want the same treatment as other members of the congregation. We don't need pity or pandering. All we need is fellowship and the respect of the people around us. Several days ago, I visited a church across the street from my house. This was my first in-person worship service since the beginning of the pandemic, and it was a rewarding experience. I found this particular community to be genuinely inclusive, welcoming, and not at all pandering toward people like me. The sanctuary had multiple accessible spaces for seating, the staff members were friendly, and the community atmosphere made me feel welcome. Simple as that. Accessibility in places of worship and spirituality should never be an afterthought. It should always be a priority. Now that phrase, I'm happy to shout as loud as I can. I'm Kevin Schaefer, Forums Director and columnist for SMA News Today.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.